Please note, this following podcast features bad language right from the fucking start. And now, it's time for the podcast which helps identify the dishonest information shared online. The Ministry of Sweeping.
Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the Ministry of Sweeping, the podcast that does what you can't be bothered to do, look into the memes and stories doing the rounds on social media and working out if there's any truth to them. And yes, I know it is an unusual name, but then so's Arm Fall Off Boy. We want people to question the unbelievable things that they see online. We want people to cut down on the spread of misinformation, and we're going to have a little fun whilst we do that as well. So settle in for some bad slash lazy investigative journalism and a whole heap of bullshit. I'm your host, the Secretary of State for Nonsense, Al Galpin, and joining me is my Parliamentary Undersecretary on this week's show. He's a comedian, host of the Partly Political broadcast, and placed third in the 2012 International Rock Paper Scissors Federation Championship. It's Tiernan Duyeb. Hey, Tiernan.
Thanks very much. Yeah, that championship was really close, and I'm still gutted that I never won. But hey,
I know, I couldn't believe it existed.
Me either at all. But you know, it turns out as well that in the championships you can bring out like outside the rock paper scissors, you can bring in the whole magic wand, a volcano argument.
Have they brought in Lizard and Spock?
Yep, Lizard and Spock. All the extras come out when it gets to professional level, and I just wasn't prepared.
Well done anyway on reaching third. That was a big achievement.
Thanks,
and thanks for coming on the show as well.
Thanks for having me. I'm very, very excited. Yeah, I'm looking forward to working out. I find that I'm suckered into fake stories far more easily than I should be, especially as someone who spends far too long on the internet reading people debunking fake stories, and then within a second I'll still retweet something without checking it and go, oh no, that wasn't real at all.
Well, I've gone from before I started doing this podcast, from having lots of things online and scrolling past them, just taking them at face value, to now I get to the point where I want those posts because I want to double check them, and they're just not showing up on my Facebook feed anymore. I'm just getting lots of fact checking stuff showing up on my Facebook feed instead. Swung the other way, because I keep posting
vigilant
about it. Yeah. I know. I think it's because it cottons on to the fact of what I'm looking at. Facebook's far too clever.
That's not good at all. It's worked out that you're smart and caters for you. What you need to do is have a really stupid week. Like, just post some really stupid links and say some really idiotic things, and then it'll get straight back on the game.
Well, this is one of the things I was planning on doing at some point on this podcast, was a little challenge to see if we can make an actual fake news story go viral. But we'll maybe try that one day.
Sounds exciting. Very good plan. It'd be so hard in today's day and age to do it, unless you're Colleen Rooney, who could absolutely nail that sort of thing. We need to learn from the master.
Yes, absolutely. So have you been up to anything interesting lately?
I suppose so. Yeah, I went to see Kate Tempest this week, which was properly very exciting because she is brilliant. But what I also realised is that I am a constantly exhausted, tired parent, and going to a music gig in a warm room that's dark, even when it's really loud, it still just makes you want to have a snooze, which is terrible, isn't it? I don't have a life anymore. Our daughter's a year and a half, which means I haven't had fun in about a year and a half. And this week I've been to a wedding party and went to see Kate Tempest live, and both times I thought, oh, I wish I was in bed, even though they're both brilliant and all the people involved were excellent. But I just, it's cold outside and it's raining a bit, and I would like more sleep.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. My little boy is a few months older than your child by the sounds of it. But yeah, every time we get a night off, we go to the cinema, it's always the risk. Am I going to make it through this film? These are comfy seats, they recline. Am I just going to fall asleep and miss the one time I've come out for months?
I don't know if you feel this, but it's not a reflection on the quality of the film. It's a reflection on how warm and comfy the chairs are, and if there's like real quiet moments. Like for me, it's not like, for example, Kate Tempest was amazing, and she was so like, she's a proper force on stage. So it kind of kept me awake. But even if she'd just gone to a quieter track, it wouldn't have been her fault. I think I just would have gone. I just would have absolutely drifted off.
Yeah, and I can imagine that. I mean, we even attempted to get Glastonbury tickets, the other weekend. I don't know what we were thinking.
That's hardcore. That's really impressive.
I mean, we didn't get any, so we live to try another day, maybe.
I think you've done the most successful thing there, in that you sort of tried to do it, which shows that you want to have some sort of life, but you didn't manage it, which means you'll end up having quite a nice, hopefully quiet weekend with sleep involved, and you'll be indoors and away from all mud. So, you know, I think you've probably won overall.
Yeah, we hope so, yeah. As long as they don't bring out any, announce any acts that I would absolutely 100% have loved to have seen, then I should be okay.
I mean, you're not already sold by Diana Ross.
No, my wife thinks I'm mad. I just turned around and went, yeah, I don't care. We were there. We went a couple of years ago. We were there when Lionel was on. That was pretty good.
That was great.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Anyway, that's enough of music for now. Let's get on to some news stories, shall we? Let's get on to the good stuff. So I've scoured social media for some news stories and memes that have been shared and taken at face value, and I've dug a little deeper to try and find the truth behind the headlines. So without any further ado, we'll move on to story number one. And this is a quote which says, as a result of cutting these tariffs, we should see a 15% reduction in the cost of honey from New Zealand, a 9% cut in the cost of grapes from South America, and of course, a 7% reduction in the cost of wine from Argentina. And that was a quote from Michael Gove. And the figures of which are also used in a UK government press release from the 8th of October. And it's been shared on Facebook and Twitter. And yeah, so he's basically saying that post-Brexit, we'll be able to set our own tariffs, and it will basically mean that the foods that we bring in will be cheaper, supposedly.
And this, of course, is what we've all been doing Brexit for, Al, is for South American grapes. And I think that's what everyone's voting was all about, just getting those South American grapes and nothing else.
I particularly like the, and of course, a 7% reduction in the cost of wine from Argentina. Of course, Michael. Of course. How could we not have thought of that?
That is, yeah, I find that anything Michael Gove says is immediately questionable just on the basis that it's come from his face, probably after he's done three or four lines to really get him fired up. It's such an odd choice of things to go for as well. I mean, I say this as someone who very much likes honey, grapes and wine, but why would you choose those? Is that what the British public are definitely crying out for? A small percent reduction in the cost of honey from New Zealand. I'm not sure that was what everyone was envisaging.
No, I don't think so. I didn't even know, you know, we imported New Zealand honey.
No, I didn't. It's not something I've ever... I normally just get the cheap Sainsbury's, whichever the little pot is that's a pound, and I haven't really thought about it. And it's probably coming from somewhere terrible. It's probably produced by battery bees or something, and I'll feel awful about it if I ever looked into it further. But I had no idea. No, absolutely baffled.
Yeah, the thought of battery bees is going to stick with me for a while. That's a good one.
Tiny little cages. They just they have pollen forced in through a straw that they actively have to stick to their knees. And I really don't know how bees turn things into honey. I've realised that I've landed myself into a story here that I can't get out of.
That's right. I can't help you either, I'm afraid. So when you saw this, did you think that would be true?
No. So. I'm going to be honest, tariffs and trade agreements is something that I didn't know anything about until about 3 years ago. Yeah. And due to the nature of talking about politics and stuff in my comedy and my podcast, I now know more than I should. And I say that I still don't really know anything. And it's still, I think, arguably one of the most boring areas of information that you can ever look into. Yeah. but what I do understand is that cutting tariffs doesn't mean that the consumer, I mean... I suppose it's how we look at this quote, in that he's saying we should see a 15% reduction in the cost of honey. It depends on who he means by we, as in traders might get 15%, but the consumers might not get 15% because it depends on how the outlets sell it. And then it depends on if they have to up the cost of, you know, local sellers in order to combat that. And there's so many things that come into it when it gets to our faces, sort of before it gets to our faces. Yeah. So, I mean, Gove might be correct in terms of the source, but it's not. You and me aren't going to get cheap South American grapes.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have thought so. And I mean, when I saw it come up on my Facebook feed, I did do a quick search and found that Channel 4 had actually fact-checked it themselves on the 10th of October. Now, part of the issue, first of all, we've got to say that this is saying that Michael Gove says the government will cut tariffs to zero on a range of products from various parts of the world if we leave with a no deal. Now, his comments and the press release both clearly suggest that there's a direct correlation between the amount that the tariff is cut and how much consumers will save, like you say. But Channel 4 quite rightly say that it's not quite that straightforward. They've got a quote from Dr. Gary Young, who is Director of Macroeconomic Modelling and Forecasting at the National Institute of Economic and Social Research, which is quite a title. And he said to them, cutting tariffs is generally good as it enables to import foods and goods and services that can be produced more cheaply abroad so that we can focus on producing the things that we are really good at. But he points out that cutting tariffs doesn't necessarily mean the cost to the consumers will fall proportionately. The benefits of tariff reduction, he says, would be shared between consumers and producers. The tariff reduction does not translate directly to cost reduction. And then they've also got a lecturer from in economics at the London School of Economics, who says consumers don't always pocket the savings because companies increase their profit margins and only pass on a fraction of the tariff cut to consumers. And they say that it's highly unlikely, for example, that a 15% tariff cut would lead to a 15% fall in prices. The fall in prices is likely to be much smaller than that 15%. So yeah, you're quite right.
There you go. Yeah, winner. It's also that it totally ignores what that might do to the British honey industry, the British grape, the famous British grape industry that we obviously have.
big industry.
And the effects it would have on our on all our industry that would have to try and compete with suddenly this super cheap New Zealand honey. Just think of British bees, people. Think of the British bees in their tiny British battery cages.
British bees for British people. The other thing, obviously, that to take into account with all of this is any benefits from reducing tariffs on imports from outside the EU are more than offset by the costs arising from a loss of access to the EU single market and the customs union. And the economics lecturer went on to say that it would damage our exports, leading to a depreciation of the pound that would raise inflation and hit living standards in the UK. So essentially, the pound falls in value. Even if we do get slightly cheaper goods, the pound's going to be worth less anyway, so it's not really going to be cheaper to us in real terms.
Yeah, and I was also reading this week about how the deal that may or will probably won't be going through after we record this somewhere on Saturday, that the customs, all the costs of filling in forms and stuff just to sell things via the EU is going to cost so much that we're all going to lose out regardless of whatever we get from everything else. I mean, it's a total brilliant, exciting situation for us all here. But think about it, New Zealand bees. So that's what it's all about.
It is indeed. So there we go. First news story of the day is pretty much tosh. So we'll leave
I knew
that.
It. It came from Michael Gove's weird plunger-like face. So indeed. It was obviously lies.
Absolutely. So we'll move on to story number two. Do you want to take us through the headline on this one, Tiernan?
I will. The headline of this is amazing, and I feel that I need to read it in an appropriate voice. I hope that's okay.
Go for it.
Look at this woman. Let us never forget. The world hasn't just become wicked. It's always been wicked. The prize doesn't always go to the most deserving. Yeah, and then there's a picture of a woman looking really sad.
There really is. No, that's just the first part of the post. The post goes on and on. I will surmise. Basically, it's the story of Irina Sendler, who worked in the Warsaw ghetto as a plumber during World War II. So this is based on what the story says. She apparently knew what the Nazis' plans were for the Jews because she was German. That's the suggestion. And smuggled 2,500 children out in her toolbox and sacks using a barking dog to keep the soldiers away. She was then caught by the Nazis and beaten, had all her arms and legs broken. But she supposedly kept a list of all the children she saved and never gave up that list. She buried it in a jar in her garden. And then she reunited as many as possible with the families after the war. She died in May 2008, aged 98, and the Post claims she was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize the year before the Post, and the original Post was actually 2012, so that suggests 2011, but that she wasn't selected. The Post then says President Obama won the same prize for his work as a community organiser for ACORN, and that Al Gore won one for a slideshow on global warming.
Wow, that's an incredible way to demean warnings about the planet going on fire. It was just a slideshow, wasn't it?
It's just a slideshow.
That's all it was. I also think there's so many questions in this. My first question is, how big was her toolbox in order to smuggle children in it? Because I've seen toolboxes, and I sadly don't have one myself. I'm not good enough at those sort of things to have one. But how would you fit a child in it? I don't know.
I've got a big toolbox in the garage. It was given as a gift to me a couple of years ago to try and kickstart me being a bit of a DIY kind of guy, but it hasn't really worked. But it's pretty big, and it's one that you open up, and then you've got like a bit that you take out so you can get to stuff underneath. That would fit like, you know, a 6 to 8 month baby in it.
Oh, wow.
I reckon. But not bigger than that.
It says children in this. Yeah. So like,
and it goes on to say that the bigger ones went out in burlap sacks. But how she managed to carry a sack with a child in it, without being spotted. I don't know. I don't know what the Nazis thought she was taking out in sacks from the sewers.
Yeah. I mean, what sort of... It's
just some sewage
As a plumber, it's just huge sacks of crap.
Yeah.
Just this is a fatberg. It was plugging up the sewer and I'm carrying it out in 15 different sacks.
Yeah, I'm going to take it home and make some kind of art installation.
Yeah. Yeah, which the Nazis wouldn't have been that keen on anyway, unless it was sort of propaganda. Yeah, it's odd. And I also really want to question how she kept a list of the children in a jar buried in her garden. Mm. And then she would have found that list. But like no one does. Like how no one remembers where they put things in the garden.
This is true.
Maybe that would have been really tricky, I think, to find it. I mean, I think that the main issue, to be fair, I think that it's very plausible that someone brilliant like her smuggled children out during the war. There were lots of amazing secret sort of war heroes who helped save Jewish kids from Nazi Germany. I think the biggest problem I have with this post is the idea that she didn't win a Nobel Peace Prize posthumously, which may have been one of the reasons that she didn't, because Al Gore had won one for a slideshow.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing logic.
Yeah. I mean, you know, fair play to Al Gore. I don't think he was taken seriously enough for many years. But I mean, you know, it's tricky, isn't it? Because we're comparing completely different things, right? Smuggling 2,500 children out is incredibly important, right?
Yes.
But the entire world potentially going on fire is also, I would say, relatively more important because that's everyone that dies.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's, I mean, I don't know. This, I don't, I feel like if some of this post is true, definitely not all of it is true.
Yeah, and this is the thing. It mentions so many things within the story. It's like, well, I don't know where to begin with this. So I will begin with the bits from the end. First off, Al Gore did win the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. It was a joint win together with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And Barack Obama did win for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples. And that was in 2000.
Yeah, just before he drone-bombed loads of kids.
Yeah. And that was in 2009. Now, the Post claims it was the year before he took office, but no, 2009 was actually while he was in office. So that part of the story is incorrect, but it is correct in pointing out that they both did win.
Right.
Now, my first instinct was what you mentioned as well. She might not have been eligible for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2011, if she died in 2008, plus what she did was in World War II. So I checked the rules for the Nobel Peace Prize. Granted, this quote is from Wikipedia, so not necessarily the most trustworthy of places. That says, according to Nobel's will, the Peace Prize shall be awarded to the person who in the preceding year shall have done the most or the best work for a fraternity between nations, for the abolition or reduction of standing armies, and for the holding and promotion of peace congresses. So if that's true...
Yeah, but she didn't do it in sort of 2010 because she was dead.
Yeah.
So unless her body was in a really convenient place that somehow, I don't know, blocked some inhumane act from happening or, you know, maybe I feel like I don't know what you could do. Unless she haunted someone who was like an awful dictator throughout 2010, then it's unlikely that anyone would have given her the prize then.
Yeah. So based on that, it suggests that she couldn't have been nominated in 2011. But I did some further digging and it found that she was nominated for the award in both 2007 and 2008. So the year she died and the year before. And 2007 obviously was the year that we mentioned already that Al Gore did win it. So she was nominated the year Al Gore won. And that was on with support from numerous prominent personalities along with the International Federation of Social Workers who backed her nomination. But she didn't get selected for the final vote on either occasion. As for the actual story itself, she wasn't German at all. She was Polish. She was a social worker, humanitarian and nurse who served in the Polish underground during the war in Warsaw. She did smuggle Jewish children out of the ghetto and then provided them with false identity documents and shelter with willing Polish families or in orphanages and other care facilities, including the Catholic convents, saving those children from the Holocaust. And then in October 1943, she was arrested by the Gestapo, but managed to hide the list of their names and locations of the rescued Jewish children, preventing this information from falling to the hands of the Gestapo. She withstood torture and imprisonment and never revealed anything about her work or the location of those children. She was sentenced to death, but narrowly escaped on the day of her scheduled execution after Zygota, the Polish Council to Aid Jews, bribed German officials to obtain her release. So that aspect of the story was true. So she was working with the Polish underground, posing as a plumber and sewage worker to go in and get those kids out.
So what I don't get is that story's pretty incredible, like the real story. Why would you change it when the real one's really good?
They change it? I don't know. Because the changes they've made to it as well don't fit their narrative. It doesn't matter. The changes.
Yeah,
it
doesn't make it.
Doesn't
the whole
matter
point
if
is at the end. Oh, she didn't win a Nobel Peace Prize, even though she was brilliant. Well, the original story is also brilliant, and she was really amazing, and hugely brave and courageous, and saved lives.
Yeah,
you could have just put the real story and then said, but Al Gore did a slideshow, and it still would have been roughly the same post.
Yeah,
but with more real in it.
I mean, the one thing that gets me from the original post is that she knew what the Nazis' plans were for the Jews (brackets being German). Close brackets, as if all German people knew exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah, they obviously sent a memo round just before it kicked off.
FYI, you'd think that if the whole country knew, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, it's sort of like nowadays. Well, no, I was going to say nowadays, if someone did a tweet about something, then maybe we'd prevent things. But that's definitely not happened so far. So I think...
A few other people would just tweet back. Don't do it.
Yeah, that's it. They're just, everyone would think it's sarcastic, or everyone would make a meme
everyone
out of
would
it.
Just responding,
and people would still die.
Yeah, go on then.
Yeah,
film it for us.
Too much goading.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. The real story is amazing. And while she may not have won the Nobel Peace Prize, she did win a heck of a lot during her life. In 1991, Sendler was made an honorary citizen of Israel. In 1996, she was awarded the Commander's Cross of the Order of Polonia Restituta. She received a higher version of that award, the Commander's Cross with Star, on the 7th of November 2001. In 2003, Pope John Paul II sent her a personal letter praising her wartime efforts. In November 2003, she received the Order of the White Eagle, Poland's highest civilian decoration, and the Polish-American Award, the Jan Karski Award for Courage and Heart, given by the American Center of Polish Culture in Washington, D.C. In April 2009, she was posthumously granted the Humanitarian of the Year Award from the Sister Rose Thiering Endowment. And in May 2009, she was posthumously granted the Audrey Hepburn Humanitarian Award.
Well, who needs the Nobel Prize? I mean,
when you've got the
that's
Audrey
a pretty
Hepburn
great list.
Award.
Yeah.
Also, she was the subject of the 2009 film The Courageous Heart of Irina Sendler, directed by John Kent Harrison, in which she was played by Anna Paquin.
Oh, wow. Which I mean, that's pretty good. Wasn't Anna Paquin was Rogue in X-Men, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, she was.
So, you know, she's been played by an X-Man, an X-Woman.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. I think she did quite well.
She did pretty good. So, yeah, there are elements of truth to the post, but there are quite a few falsehoods thrown in for good measure as well to try and twist things a little bit. So
for no real reason.
For no real reason. So basically trying to have a pop at Al Gore and Obama, by the sounds of it.
I feel like you could have done that in an easier way, like by typing, I think Al Gore's a dick, you know, like rather than change a story. Like, it just feels like someone's made too much effort to achieve having a go at Al Gore.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so that was a 50-50 one, really. So we shall move on to story number three. And this is a photo of a diesel generator along with the caption, "The Extinction Rebellion campsite in Hyde Park has this nifty little diesel generator hooked up and several patio heaters going full blast in the bar area." So it came from Tougher Bee on Twitter posted this, and Leslie Stanbury on Facebook. They seem to be the first posts on either site. Been shared a lot of times on there. So yeah, it's claiming that basically Extinction Rebellion group are hypocrites for using a diesel generator and patio heaters.
Yeah, I mean, for a start, I have seen this one before, and I'm afraid I've already seen it disclaimed. Mm. But as many people pointed out, the picture isn't of Hyde Park whatsoever.
No.
And there are various American phone numbers that you can see in the photo on the porter cabin and things around it. And I don't remember Extinction Rebellion ever setting up a kind of bar area and tents doing tattoos. It's not,
no.
It's not something I think they did from a kind of, immediate protest. It takes quite a lot of effort to set those things up, and pre-planning and probably licenses. So it feels a little bit That it feels massively bullshit. It also, though, I think it addresses one of the things that drives me mad, which is the argument that these people are protesting against climate change. Maybe they shouldn't have phones that they have to charge, or, you know, they shouldn't wear, you know, coats that weren't, you know, I don't know, that aren't made from organic wheat or whatever, you know. And the fact is, we live in a world where these things exist. We do have to eat. We have to stay warm. And all those things are minor compared to 3,000 coal factories churning out crap every single day that requires governmental levels of change. So, I mean, while I would feel a bit annoyed if they were using a diesel generator and several patio heaters, you would think that was slightly hypocritical. At the same time, you go, they might need to stay warm so they don't die, so they can keep protesting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like that cartoon, isn't it? Cartoon meme that says, oh, we should improve society somewhat. Oh, and yet you participate in society. Curious.
Yeah, well, it's you know, this argument's used so many times, like the argument against champagne socialism is, oh, well, they've got money. If you really believe in it, why wouldn't you give up all your money to help everyone else? Yeah, well, then, because then they wouldn't be heard either, and they're using their money to highlight. Like, it's such a weird way to think about it, you know, almost as though it just annoys people that someone's doing something and they're not, so they feel they've got to rail against it.
Yeah, well, you mentioned there, obviously, that the if you look closely, there are American phone numbers on this generator. It's actually available on cat.com, this photo. It's from an editorial promoting generators for Caterpillar, and that photo was taken at the 2011 Summer Camp Music Festival in Illinois.
Wow.
So definitely not anything to do with Extinction Rebellion, definitely not anything to do with Hyde Park. Now,
I mean, Dot is nowhere near Hyde Park. And you think at least there must be a picture of a generator at Hyde Park from a festival. You'd think at least get the right park.
Yeah. We had
in the
one,
right country.
We had a story a few weeks ago that was, again, a post anti-Extinction Rebellion. And it said it was a photo of mess left by them in Hyde Park in Sydney. But it wasn't. It was a photo of Hyde Park in London. And it was nothing to do with Extinction Rebellion. So at least in that case, it was a park called Hyde Park, even if it wasn't the one that you said it was. And I even Googled there is a Hyde Park in Sydney. It's like they just made up a park, but it did exist. And I mean, this one is literally completely wrong country, not even called the same thing.
I mean, what I'm getting, especially from these last two, is that people are either putting in too much effort pointlessly or not enough effort. You know, when they could have done that. You could have just at least Googled Hyde Park generator. I'm sure. I mean, I haven't done it. I'm sure something would come up.
I'm sure you could. And I scrolled through the comments on the Facebook post of this, and someone had commented on there saying, pointed out that, no, this is where the photo is actually from. And then the woman who posted the initial thing responded to that and said, yeah, well, I was just using it to make my point. There really was a generator and heaters. So, well, why didn't you take a picture then?
Yeah.
Why find one online?
That's just ridiculous. I could take a picture of almost anything. In fact, I should like use a picture from a film or something of a monster attacking a city and go, yeah, well, monsters have attacked the city and that's pretty outrageous. Yeah. And when they say, oh, that didn't happen, that was in a film, I go, yeah, I just use it to make my point. That Godzilla could attack everyone.
Now, I did some further digging and I found a post on fullfacts.org who have pointed out that some Extinction Rebellion protests have used diesel generators, but they have actually posted about them on social media. There's a Twitter exchange after an event in Northern Ireland, and someone queried their use of lights, electric lights, at an event. And then the official Extinction Rebellion Northern Ireland Twitter account responded and said, thanks for making the argument that profound system change is needed as soon as possible. And with that post was a photo of the generator with a cardboard sign on it that said, yes, this is a diesel generator. We are currently working on the problem.
Well, fair play. It is very hard. Like, again, I don't know. I've not ever had to grab a generator and heaters for an event. It's not my field of expertise. But, you know, if you live in a world where you need to set up a protest, and it's probably harder to get a solar powered or, you know, a smaller energy one than it is to grab a diesel generator. And overall, I suppose its use is not going to be as bad as like having a private jet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is the thing. Like you say, if you're doing something on this scale, you're going to need power. And the only things you can get to get that power are these generators. I mean, that's part of the point. They want to make these stop these things being needed. Let's make solar power ones. Portable solar power generators would be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this is all wrong. This tweet is all wrong.
It is all wrong. So yeah, we got another one that's complete bollocks today, as with most weeks on this program. We have more fakes than trues, and every time
it's almost like you pick them that way.
Well, I don't always. I sometimes make sure that we get a few in there that are true, or at least based on truth, because you've got to. Get people to learn that A, don't necessarily trust everything, but B, don't also distrust everything. There are probably elements of truth in most things that have just been warped.
Yeah, I'm now going to clearly say the next three are true just so I don't get caught out.
Hey, just breaking into this episode just to bring you a few words about a charity event I'm working on that I want you to know about. Now, back in 2017, I organised the Southampton Superpod, a live 36-hour podcast to raise money for comic relief. A heap of podcasts from all over the UK came to Southampton, and some shows even called in from Wales, Finland, the US, and even Australia. It was a wonderful event, lots of fun, and we raised a decent chunk of money. Now I'm aiming to do something similar for sport relief, but on a bigger scale, and hopefully raising even more money. Superpod 2020 will be a two-day podcasting event over the weekend of the 7th and 8th of March. I'm organising some great sporting and comedy podcasts to come along and be a part of the event. Now, these shows will mostly be free entry to the public, but there will be a special ticket-only headline act each evening. Details of the venue, headliners and ticket prices being worked on at present, and we're hoping to make some announcements soon. Until then, we'd love if you could follow us on social media and help us spread the word. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Sotton Superpod, that's S-O-T-O-N Superpod, and we have a Facebook page too, just search for Superpod 2020. For more information, head to our website, superpod.co.uk, and if you want to be involved in any way, please email me, info@superpod.co.uk. So, speaking of which, we will move on to the next one. Do you want to read us the headline on this one?
Yeah. Okay. So, if you worked every single day making $5,000 a day from the time Columbus sailed to America to the time you're reading this tweet, you would still not be a billionaire and you would still have less money than Jeff Bezos makes in a week. No one works for $1 billion. Yeah, which is it's really I haven't worked out the maths because I'm terrible at maths and numbers scare me. But I mean, I don't know if that figure's correct, but I would have thought that it's probably very hard to make as much money as Jeff Bezos makes in a week unless you're Jeff Bezos. I think it's pretty, you know, he's one of the richest men in the world and probably soon in outer space. So I don't dispute that it's really hard to get the same amount of money as Jeff Bezos. I don't know if that's the right number or the right amount of years that you would have to work in order to do it, which seems, I mean, again, I don't think it would be worth it, really, if you were having to somehow live for that long while trying to earn $5,000 a day. I mean, in the time of Columbus, that would have been really hard to earn that much money in a day. You'd have really had to be like raiding Spanish kings or something. I don't know how you'd have done it. I'm not sure that this one is untrue in its sentiment, but I don't know if that's the right amount of money.
Yeah, no. The thing with this one is it's... I'll just say first, it was initially posted by someone called Jeremiah Red on Twitter on the 7th of October. It got over 300,000 likes when I was looking at it the other day. And has then been shared on Facebook pages such as Revolution Porn and Punks for Progress.
Wow.
So that's the
What's Revolution Porn? Is that just... I mean, I'd like to think that it's pornographic images that are constantly spinning around and around. But it's not that, is it?
I don't think so, no. I didn't look at the rest of their posts, to be fair. I was too busy thinking of this one. Maybe I'll go back and have a look. We'll see. Now, it's a similar story in tone to one we had a few weeks ago where we had one that said a million seconds ago was last Thursday, a billion seconds ago was 1980-something. But the thing is like that story, is the longer it gets from when the post was first posted to when you're actually reading it, the more inaccurate the maths gets. Because obviously it's saying every day $5,000 from when you up to when you read this tweet. So at some point, if you read this tweet in however many years' time, it's not going to be true.
And does it also depend on whether you're using the American billions or the UK billions? Because it's different numbers, isn't it?
Well, I looked into that not long ago. It's the same now. The British billion is the same as it. The old school British billion was a million million. But in order to avoid confusion, effectively we've adopted the 1,000 million as a billion, because it was just right, so confusing.
In theory, it would have been harder if we'd been trying to make a billion in Columbus's times in the UK.
Yes, yeah, it would. It really would.
Than it would have been now. So surely he's got to take that into consideration as well.
And on a sidetrack, when we say Columbus discovered America, we don't mean the United States of America. He stumbled across the Bahamas and then explored parts of the coast of Central and Southern America. And plus, he never discovered them. There were already people there. But that's, yep, you know, something else, to another tangent. So one of the iterations of this claim also had the screenshot of this tweet along with a comment saying, holy fuck, math checks out. Sorry, math checks out is an American page. So they say 5,000 times 365.25 is 1.8 million and a bit. And 1.8 million times 527 equals 962 million. So that 365.25 refers to the days in an average year to account for leap years. And 527 relates to years, supposedly taking us back to 1492, the year that Columbus sailed the ocean blue. However, as at time of recording, 1492 was 526 years and 9 months ago. But I'll guess I'm going to allow them to round up to 527 for ease of maths, because I wouldn't want to work out the decimals on that either. So truthorfiction.com have done some maths for us, fortunately. And they say the first relevant calculation is the value of a year of 5,000 a day, which they've got as 1.78 million. But they say a person earning 5,000 every day of the year would earn close to $1.8 million per year. If you want to be pedantic, the figure would be based on 262 working days to account for holidays and weekends and add up to 1.3 million. But presumably the original tweet was working on a more recognisable 365-day-long year. Now you take that yearly figure of 1.78 million and multiply it by 527 years, and you get $938 million. So a billion is 1,000 million. So at that rate, as at time of recording, you'd be about $62 million short of the billion. But that is assuming right, that A, you could live that amount of time, and B, you have a shit bank account with 0% interest and have somehow survived without spending a single penny.
Sure. So if anything, though, if those were the case, if you had a shit bank account and you somehow lived that long, that tweet would get more true the later you were reading it.
Yeah, it would get closer. The later you're reading it, the closer and closer to a billion it's going to get. So effectively, the longer you leave it, they say, based on further calculations, at that rate, you would hit the billion-dollar mark in 2054. So if someone was reading this tweet in 2055, it would definitely not be true. But now it right, is kind of true.
So if listeners, you haven't read this tweet yet, save it.
Save it for another 30-odd years.
Yeah, 2054, treat yourself. 35 years. I don't know what date that will be in 2054. I guess there's probably a specific date as well.
There probably is, but we've just gone by average years as well, back to 1492. So I'm guessing we're from October, so because we use
October 2054. That's October 2054. That's when you've got to indulge.
The tweet becomes, that part of the tweet comes nonsense. Now the other aspect of the tweet is the worth of Jeff Bezos. Now Business Insider attempted to calculate various figures related to his fortune in January of this year, placed his net worth at $137 billion. Wow. And the annual earnings rate that they calculated, again, estimated based on the change in his Forbes net worth year over year, they think he's earned $6.54 billion a month, which is more than $1.5 billion a week, and more than $215 million a day over the last 12 months.
Wow.
Per hour, he makes $8.9 million, which is roughly 315 times Amazon's median annual worker pay. An Amazon worker earning the $15 minimum wage would need to work about 597,000 hours, or 24 hours a day for 68 years, to earn what he makes in 1 hour.
My goodness. And I wonder what he does in an hour to earn that. I mean, not probably that. Not very much.
No.
No. I should ask him to lend me a tenner or something. I'm sure he'd...
I don't. Also, this was worked out in January of this year, these figures, and I think he has since been divorced. So whether those figures have changed substantially since then, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, it might be half.
It might be half of that, yeah. But he's probably still earning the same amount. So he'll be back to the big numbers pretty quickly, I would have thought.
Yeah, I can't feel that sorry for him, I have to say.
No. So, yeah, that story is kind of true. The figures are dodgy the longer you leave it, but the basis of it is true.
Yeah, again, it's that thing where they've got the end bit right, a bit like the Irene Sendler story. The end bit, they've sort of gone, you know, yeah, she didn't get a Nobel Peace Prize, which she didn't, and the Jeff Bezos went, you don't make as much money as him. Yeah, we don't. But then they've got there a really weird way.
Yeah, yeah, they have. I don't know why.
So sort your setups out before, you know, you may have the punchline, you've got to fix the setups.
I think what they did is like pick a famous year in history. Oh, how about 1492? Okay, now work out how much a day you'd have to earn to still be a little bit less than what he makes in a week. They could have gone further back in history and added a small amount of money. Or
yeah,
gone a bit
I
later
like
with a higher amount.
They should have given three or four different options.
Yeah. Yeah. If you earned $5 a day from the day the first dinosaur walked the earth, how far would you be? I'm not working it out. Someone else can work that out. So we will move on to story number 5, which says, 9 out of the 11 justices who made the ruling on Boris Johnson's suspension being unlawful received stipends of £175,000 plus from the EU. Original source is unknown, but it's been seen on Facebook pages such as the Student Brexit Group. So, yeah, the gist of it is posts suggesting that Supreme Court judges get paid large amounts by the EU. What are your initial thoughts on that one?
It's not true. We're the British courts are sovereign, aren't they? And they have been forever. We've got a sovereign justice system that is supported by British funds. So I'm pretty certain that this is not true. I don't know if that's meant to be £175,000 each, if that's maybe altogether, as in that's what the EU maybe through some weird fund somewhere it goes somehow to the court. I'm wondering if someone's taken a very vague donation that's happened at some point and made this sound like each judge gets that much money from the EU, which wouldn't be true. But I don't think any of the justices get any sort of funding from the EU directly. And if they did, they'd have to very openly declare it and probably declare a conflict of interest before they worked on any cases that were to do with it.
Mm. Plus, it's a funny old claim because, remember, we were all told that prorogment had nothing to do with Brexit and the EU. So why it matters if they've been paid by them or not, I'm not sure. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was what we were told, that it had absolutely nothing to do with Brexit, the proroguing. But then as soon as the decision came in, Boris Johnson said these judges are delaying Brexit. Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. Yeah.
It's a funny old world. Anyway, the interesting thing on this one, again, fullfact.org have done some research on this and I looked into a bit of it. Now, they've looked into it and they can't find any evidence of any type of this kind of payment from the EU to these judges. But two of those judges work ad hoc for an institution separate to the EU, the European Court of Human Rights. And two more of them used to, but they don't get anywhere near the £175,000 from that. Now, the European Court of Human Rights told Full Fact that ad hoc judges get paid €501 per day that they spend in court, and nothing for any preparation days. They confirmed that one of those two judges has never actually come to the court, whilst the other has only been there twice in the last 4 years. So from that, it doesn't seem possible that they could have earned the money from there. It's also crucial to point out that the European Court of Human Rights is not part of the EU's legal system. It's separate from the Court of Justice, which is responsible for making EU member countries comply with EU laws. The European Court of Human Rights doesn't have the same members as the EU. For example, it includes Russia. So there appears to be no evidence that they get any money from the EU themselves, but a couple of them do work ad hoc for the European Court of Human Rights.
Yeah, which is, as you said, a completely different thing. So this is complete nonsense. It's also that weird thing of just trying to blame them or find a reason to blame them for their judgment and forgetting that their judgment is entirely to do with the law and how you know, how Parliament should work and who has the power between Parliament and the courts. And the executive, sorry. So it just feels like a very silly claim to be thrown about.
It does. Some of the tweets say that it came from the Law Gazette, and that's where the original claim had come from. It turns out, after some more digging, that the quote in question was posted to the comments section under an article about the Supreme Court decision, and it had since been deleted by the Law Gazette for being untrue. So it's a user comment on their website that had been shared so many times and people started believing, but it's completely made up as far as we can see.
That's incredible. That's like when you used to have a lot of comedians who on their Edinburgh Fringe posters would say, star of Michael McIntyre's Roadshow, but they weren't Michael McIntyre. They'd just been on it. So,
yeah. So story number five is also complete shit, which brings us to our sixth and final story of the day. Do you want to read the headline on this one?
I do. I like this one. The entire Super Mario Brothers game was only 40 kilobytes. This image is 283 kilobytes. And then there's an image there of Super Mario, the first Super Mario game. And just it's I think it's from level one where he's about to jump on some Goombas. I like this, and I feel like, again, I have no idea whether the kilobytes are correct, but I feel like it's quite true, because games now are, well, in fact, just computers now, and everything we do uses so much more memory than things used to. And if you look at old, like, Spectrum games or old NES games, it's a silly amount of, a tiny amount of memory that's used to create them. It's completely bonkers.
It is. Now, this came from the gaming subreddit, and has then been shared all over the place on Twitter. Now, there's a very simple issue with this claim. You can do a reverse image search on the picture and find out where it came from. It also tells you how big the files are. None of those images were 283 kilobytes. It's possible that the initial image was, when it was saved on someone's computer. As soon as you upload it to the internet, it gets compressed. So all the versions that we've seen, I've looked through, and also truthorfiction.com have also done this, and they say that all the versions they've seen are between 38 and 52 kilobytes. And it's the same. I've found nothing higher than 70 or 80 kilobytes. So it appears that the second part of the claim is highly unlikely. It's possible that the initial image was 283 kilobytes, but through compression it's just been squished so much that it doesn't actually hold up. So second part, very quickly got rid of because it's nonsense. But the more interesting part is the first part of the claim, that was the game 40 kilobytes? Because even if the image is 50, 40 for the whole game is still impressive.
Yeah, but is it impressive from, you know, because again, I sort of seem to remember that game, well, we've all just come so far and everything runs quicker on more memory and things. Again, this is definitely not a field that I understand. I just like playing computer games and kind of get excited. So,
yeah, same. The claim about this, the 40 kilobyte size, had actually been shared a few times online. The gaming subreddit also had a claim about it in November 2010 and in January 2017. In the 2017 version, claimed that the game was 31 kilobytes. Now, there's an article on the website called Warped Factor from 2015 that claims the capacity of the cartridge was 256 kilobits. Yes, that's kilobits, not bytes. If you know the difference, then 256 kilobits is about 32 kilobytes. So with the 246 kilobits to play with, apparently there was a huge amount of recycling going on with Super Mario Brothers. The clouds and the bushes are the same sprite, coloured differently. And if you look at that image, you can see it. The little bush on the bottom and the clouds, exactly the same shape. And apparently the outside of Bowser's castle is a combination of the smaller castle sprites, and many of the sound effects serve dual purposes. So they're recycling a lot to try and fit everything into that size. Now there's another article from Gama Sutra, also from 2015, which says 30 years ago, Miyamoto and Tezuka's small team managed to pack 32 levels, over a dozen enemies, taught platforming physics, a bevy of sound effects, and a memorable four-instrument soundtrack into the 40 kilobytes of ROM we now know as Super Mario Brothers. So and that says 40K was generous and expensive in 1985. When Nintendo's engineers devised the Famicom hardware in the early 80s, they used Donkey Kong as the spec software, and 40K more than doubled the necessary ROM to contain their arcade source. And cartridges split that 40K into memory into two distinct chips, 8 kilobytes of it of character memory, so the graphics, and 32 kilobytes of program memory, or the game's code. So they think that's possibly where the 32K version of the story came from. But yeah, the 40K was the whole thing, graphics and thing all in one.
I mean, that's just amazing. It's just so impressive. And I think it makes, I mean, I used to absolutely love the first Super Mario. And I think it just makes it even more impressive that they managed to be really inventive with how they did it and made it look that good. Because also, I think that until someone pointed out to it to me now, I never would have even thought to check if the clouds and the bushes were the same. It didn't matter. The game was so playable.
Exactly. I never would have noticed that either. But it explains why the levels are all so repetitive. You get the same tubes and you get the same bits and pieces because, of course, you don't have any room for any other different types of graphic. You haven't got room for a different ice level or this, that and the other. It's the same thing, just different colours. When you go into a cave, the bricks are just darker and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, it's sort of easy to forget that most games were very repetitive.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, back then, and it's only now when you sort of see how like incredible computer games are now that you look back and go, oh wow, that's just the same thing over and over again. But at the time, it was, I mean, one of my big favorites was Bubble Bobble, which I played for hours and hours with my brother, and it's essentially 110 levels of exactly the same thing.
Yeah. So yeah, this one, the game part of it is true, the image part of it is not, but it's still impressive nonetheless.
Well, so at least a bit of every story, if not all of it, yeah, has been bullshit on all six,
on all of them. This is the way we go. Yeah. There's always an element of something that is fishy, and also always an element of the fishy ones that is based on truth. That's been twisted.
You can't trust anyone nowadays.
You really can't. And that's why we're here, to prove to people you've got to be careful with what you share online, because it might be complete nonsense. You might be spreading fake news. So that basically wraps up our news section for the week. If anyone listening has seen something online or heard something that you want to know if it's true or not, let us know. We'll take a look at some suggested stories and discuss them next time. You can contact us on Twitter and Instagram, where we are at MOSweeping. You can email us at MOSweeping@gmail.com. And if you use Anchor, you can leave us a voicemail on there. We're also MOSweeping. Plus, we've got a Facebook page where you can get updates from us, as well as a Facebook group where you can join the community and share fake stories that you've found and find out in advance who's going to be on episodes and things. And I think you can work out what those are called. Just search for Ministry of Swooping. So now we move on to the Ministry of Swooping fact check quiz. Each week my guest is given a series of 10 facts and have to judge whether they are true or false. We then place them on the fact checking leaderboard. Currently there are four names, well technically five names, atop the charts: Jim Cliff from the Fallacious Trump podcast, Karen Robinson from Primarily 2020, Jack and Adder from Totally Unprepared Politics, and Kitty Galpin from Being My Wife have all scored 7 out of 10. And also Matt Lees from Legend in My Spare Time rounds out the list in last place with 6 out of 10. The only person not at the top of the chart, which is a little bit upset about. So are you ready to tackle this?
Yeah, I'm about to make Matt Lees feel much happier, I'm certain.
Okay, so number one, your head ages faster than your feet.
False.
It's kind of true. I say it's true, but the science behind it is a little bit dodgy, but it's true. Basically, your feet spend more time closer to the centre of the Earth's gravitational field, where time moves ever so slightly slower. So it's true as long as you spend a lot of your time stood up or sat up. If you spend all of your time lying down.
I was taking that from my point of view, where I've spent a lot of it lying down. I'm a comedian. I've spent a lot of years sleeping more than I should have done, so...
Number two, the only letters that don't appear in the periodic table are U and J.
No, that's false.
It is false. J and Q are the two letters that don't appear.
Right, yeah, because U is definitely in there. Yeah. I've seen U in there.
AU for
rubbish.
Gold.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one is false. Correct. Number three, there is no difference between a coffin and a casket.
True.
No, that one's false. Coffins are tapered and six-sided, whereas caskets are completely rectangular.
Oh, wow. That's the difference. Okay, fair play. I've not died yet, so I didn't know that.
Okay, number four. The electric chair was invented by a dentist.
True.
Yes, it is true. A dentist by the name of Alfred P. Southwick, member of the Buffalo Scientific Society, was told of a story of a man who was killed by electricity in an accident and decided there could be a use to such a thing.
Well, it just, it also feels very much in line with how dentists like to treat people.
Yeah, and he also used one of his old dental chairs as the first electric chair.
Horrific.
Number five. The man who was chief model maker for the first series of Thomas the Tank Engine and Friends was once in a band with Brian May and Roger Taylor.
True.
It is true. Tim Staffel was his name. He left the band, which was called Smile, who then hired Freddie Mercury and John Deacon to take on his lead vocal and bass guitar duties, and they became Queen in the process.
Oh, wow. There you go. That's incredible.
It is. Number six. In 2006, a Coca-Cola employee sold secrets to Pepsi.
I want this to be true, so I'm going to say true because I want it to be.
It's actually false. They offered the secrets to Pepsi, but Pepsi turned them down and dobbed them into Coca-Cola.
Oh, damn. So they tried the double agent, but it was, yeah, Pepsi that denied them.
Yeah.
That's really, I suppose, yeah, I suppose Pepsi almost, you know, make a... It's their modus operandi that they're not Coke,
yeah,
so they wouldn't want to then be the same thing.
Exactly.
Oh, Pepsi, you let me down with your goody two-shoes ways.
Okay, number seven. The first movie to release a motion picture soundtrack was Fantasia.
I'm going to say true.
It was false. Ooh. It was Snow White.
Ah, oh, damn. White, God, really? First. That early on? That's, yeah, incredible.
Number eight, Canadians say sorry so much that a law was passed in 2009 declaring that an apology cannot be used as evidence of admission of guilt.
That feels false.
It's actually true.
Oh, God, I knew it. I knew it would be because it's so silly.
It is. I even double-checked and triple-checked it to make sure it was true because it sounds so ridiculous.
Damn, I now know I'm off the leaderboard as well. These goddamn Canadians. I hope they're sorry about that.
Spaghetti is both the singular and the plural, so one strand is called a spaghetti.
Yeah, that's true.
That's false. A single strand is called a spaghetto.
Is it? Spaghetti
is just the plural.
Spaghettos are not the circular little... Oh, no, spaghetti hoops, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ah, a spaghetto.
A spaghetto is one single one.
Well, I'm learning a lot. Even if I'm failing, I feel like I'm learning.
And finally, number 10. If a polar bear and a grizzly bear mate, their offspring is called a pizzy bear.
I want that to be true. So I don't think it is, but I'm going to say it's true because I really hope there's a whole load of pizzy bears out there.
It is true.
Oh, incredible. That's beautiful.
It's true. I love that one. I found that one out. So at the end of those 10, Tynan, you have scored 4.
Oh, damn. That's pretty low, isn't it? That's, yeah, pretty low.
I'm afraid you now bring up the rear of the leaderboard.
I knew it would happen. I'm too gullible. It's also, so many of those just sound like things that I really wish. I just want some hope. I just want some hope, Al, in the world.
Yeah, maybe this is not the podcast for people with hope. I don't know. Maybe this is what we're discovering through this.
That's fair.
Well, that kind of brings the show to a close. So before we go, just a little bit of begging from me, first of all. If you've listened this far through the show, then thank you very much. We're honoured to have you with us. Please do hit that subscribe button and make sure you don't miss any more episodes. And if you have a minute, do give us a rating and a review on whatever podcast system you listen to us on. They really do help us out. Also, don't forget to follow us on all the social medias and send us any news stories and stuff. Contact details are going to come up again at the end of the show. Now, before we go, do you want to tell everyone where they can get in touch with you, Tynan, and what your podcast is?
So as long as you can spell my name, which is far harder than you'd think, I'm at Tynan Duyeb on Twitter and tynandueb.co.uk. My podcast is the Partly Political Broadcast, which is weekly. It's me having a breakdown about all of the politics, but with jokes. And then I speak to clever people who tell me about things that are actually going on. Also, I'd just like to plug that I'm now the host of Nesta's Future Curious podcast, which is out at the moment, where it's not as much comedy, but it's speaking to lots of people that do brilliant social innovation and genuinely hopeful things about the future, which is really nice at the moment. Oh, much like pizzy bears.
Yeah, well, there you go. Maybe that's something for a future episode to look into. Cheer us all up with some pizzy bears.
Absolutely.
And some ligers. Who are my other favorite crossbreed name. Anyway,
yeah, it's really good.
On with that, we end the show with our good friend Rando Cardrician, who picks our episode subtitle. So I've drawn two random cards from the standard UK version of Cards Against Humanity. So our subtitle for today will be, "What is Batman's guilty pleasure? Shitting out a perfect Cumberland sausage."
And on... beautiful, which is probably his dinner as well.
Yes, that's a very good point. Thank you. And on that unsavoury note, we will say thanks for listening and goodbye.
Bye.
If you want to contact the Ministry of Swooping, you can email moswooping@gmail.com. You can send a voicemail at anchor.fm/moswooping. You can also join our Facebook group and be a part of the community. Just search for Ministry of Swooping. Don't forget, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram, where we are at MO Swooping.